All right. Good morning, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower. Here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich with the opening bell and the great Steve Cochran at 6. 312-981-7200 is talk and text. It's Triple Play Thursday, so get your choices in for artists, three songs, and you program, as we do every morning, you program the bumps, the music that we hear coming back from commercials. A little bit later on, we'll start Triple Play Thursday, so get your choices in at 312-981-7200. And we are going to talk about cliffhangers, the best and worst cliffhangers in TV and in movies, and that'll be coming up a little bit later on. And right now, though, I would like to welcome back to the show Dan Feinberg. He's the TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print. That's F-I-E-N, F-I-E-N, The Fine Print. And we have him on every couple of weeks to talk about television, and we welcome Dan to the show. Dan, welcome back.
Thank you much, Nick.
Yeah, how are you? Good?
I'm doing well, doing well. How about you?
Not bad, not bad. I want to start out with a show that I binged this past weekend.
Excellent.
And I really want to talk about Lady Dynamite. Now, you mentioned it the last time you were on, you mentioned it in passing, and I watched it just in 2 days over this past weekend. I watched the whole season, and I absolutely loved it. I thought it was really great. Talk a little bit about it. Tell everybody what it is.
Well, Lady Dynamite, it stars Maria Bamford, who people will know from the fourth season of Arrested Development, and it's sort of the latest in a string of comedians play versions of themselves wandering through Los Angeles, etc., sitcoms, but it's a different series than that because it's also about her struggles with her mental health, and it's set in three different time periods, and it's all innovative and strange and dark, and you've now seen more of it than I have, because when we last talked, I'd seen four episodes, which I thought were really very, very good, but over the last weekend, I was watching other things for next week,
right.
So I wasn't able to binge, but how does it progress after those four episodes?
It's great. I watched all 12, and I absolutely love it. There is a through line to it, and there is an arc to her character, and there's a very satisfying conclusion to the whole thing, which is odd because it's so all over the map, especially, you know, I really love the pilot was really great, the way they set up how they're going to, you know, do the abrupt time shifts and stuff and have Patton Oswalt break character and tell her not to do stand-up, and Brian Posehn is in there. All of that stuff, the setup was great. And then they just follow that structure throughout the entire run of the series. It's a little, as it goes on, it's not quite as, you know, like by episode 10, 11, 12, when there clearly has to be some sort of resolution to, you know, what happens to her. There are more conventional elements, I'll say, in the latter episodes than there are in the first half of the series. But to say conventional within the context of that show is just, it's also very creative.
I thought that the third and fourth episodes were already more conventional, in quotation marks again, maybe not the third so much, which I think is the one with Mira Sorvino, which I think was definitely one of my favorites, but yeah. Certainly the fourth one with Brandon Routh was conventional in quotation marks, I guess, as you say. It's definitely not like every sitcom out there, but it was kind of, you know, if there was an A story, it followed through the entire episode. I think I was supposed to take it literally, et cetera, and therefore that's as close as it gets. No, I definitely would have loved to have spent my weekend binging Lady Dynamite, but unfortunately, the premieres don't stop. They never stop.
I know. We'll talk about that in a second. I want to quickly mention, though, I was talking about Lady Dynamite on the show yesterday, as I've been talking about it since I got on the air on Monday. Just like every morning I mentioned it because I just love the show, and I love Maria Bamford so much. I was told by Esmeralda Leon, who does Traffic on the show here, that she was on Full House, Maria Bamford.
As in the original Full House? Or as in,
She apparently, now I'd never watched Full House. It was not in my, you know, it was not on my radar at that time, and it never has been. But evidently she played a stand-up comedian who dated Joey, who dated Coulier.
Phew, that sounds both intriguing and horrifying.
And now
to have them both in the Netflix comedy universe with Lady Dynamite and Fuller House, the possibilities for crossovers and spinoffs and other horrible, horrible things. I mean, the mind boggles.
Yeah, no, that was my reaction too. That was like absolutely my first reaction, was horrified and fascinated by it. But Esmeralda sent me a still. She messaged me a still over from Full House, and there's Maria Bamford. She's got 80s hair with the bangs and the straight, and she's sitting next to Coulier, and it's certainly her. And I mean, she's been in the business long enough, she is, as she mentions like repeatedly on Lady Dynamite, she is 45 years old, so, and she's been doing stand up for a long time, so it's not inconceivable. It's just that so much of what Maria Bamford, as far as I know her from, her stand-up, her appearances in different things on television and this show, is just so the complete opposite of Full House.
There's no question that she seems to come from a different comedic world. On the other hand, if you're a comic in the 80s and early 90s and you're trying to pay the bills, I assume you end up with a lot of very strange things on your resume.
Yes.
And while Full House is probably an extreme of what those could be, I think she's got a bunch of things that are hard on her resume. And look, I'm looking at it online now, and there she is, season 7, episode 16. It's Maria Bamford.
There she is. Yeah. I had no idea. Esmeralda told me, and I refused to believe her until I saw it for myself. But I thought that was an interesting little piece of, a piece of trivia right there. But I highly recommend Lady Dynamite. I think it's great and one of the most creative shows on television. Let me just say this, Dan. I don't know if I'm going out on a limb, but I'm saying Anna Gasteyer needs to dust off her mantelpiece. That's all I'm saying.
Phew. Okay. Well, I mean, I just knowing what the competition looks like, I know how tough that's going to be. But on the other hand, she's, Anna Gasteyer is always an extremely talented person.
Absolutely. I agree with you. And as you will find out as you watch the rest of Lady Dynamite, she is consistently brilliantly funny on every episode she appears, like the best work she's ever done. And I love Anna Gasteyer, but this is the best thing she's ever done. She's phenomenal.
I'd be very interested to see if Netflix could get any sort of Emmy attention for this, or if they're even going to push for it, just given how many things Netflix is going to have to promote. There's only so much they can do. I've seen pictures of the Netflix Emmy promotional boxes that they've been sending out, and they're these huge boxes of DVDs and screeners. But even still, you can't make, sending people DVDs is one thing, but giving people the time to actually watch them is so much a different thing.
And especially something as strange as Lady Dynamite.
It is still a very L.A. sitcom. It's a very Hollywood sitcom, and Emmy voters do tend to like that kind of thing in principle. It's just there is so much TV and there's so much Netflix TV, and how Netflix is going to choose to separate its own shows and what they're going to choose to put their might behind is a mystery to me.
Speaking of Netflix, BoJack Horseman is going to return, and I'm very happy about this, and I think you are too, Dan.
I'm extremely happy. He'll be back on July the 22nd, I believe they announced today, and it is one of my favorite. It's one of our favorite comedies on TV, and hopefully more people will catch up on it and be ready for season 3, because you can watch those two seasons in a weekend and be all prepared.
Which is what I did. So, after you told me about it, and again, my friend Esmeralda here at the station was like, you got to watch BoJack Horseman. It's great. And it really first of all, tell everybody what BoJack Horseman is so that they can maybe check out Netflix and catch up.
Well, BoJack Horseman is actually an awful lot, in fact, like Lady Dynamite, because it is about a manic depressive former 80s sitcom star. So, the same show, ultimately. It just happens that in this particular case, he's animated and he's a horse.
Right.
But otherwise, totally same show. But yes, it's about a horse who was back in the late 80s and early 90s on a very famous TV show, a sort of Full House-esque sitcom, and now he's going through life without the same level of success, but still with a fair level of success. And he's voiced by Will Arnett, and his live-in houseboy type thing is voiced by Aaron Paul. And it is both genuinely hilarious and also, in some cases, extremely dark and messed up.
Yeah.
And it manages to balance those two things in a way that I don't know. There definitely are some shows on TV that do comparably. Something like Review on Comedy Central would be another show that does similarly, but not many, and it's still impressive to watch the High Wire act.
Yeah, it's terrific. It's a terrific show. It's BoJack Horseman. You can catch up on the first two seasons on Netflix right now, and season three begins in July on Netflix. And again, Lady Dynamite, highly, highly recommended. Hey, Dan, hang on, okay?
Of course.
All right, Dan Feinberg is with us, and we've got some questions from you that we have that you texted in, and we'll get to some of those as well, and more. So we're going to talk TV. It's Dan Feinberg, and you can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N, The Fine Print. We'll take a break for the news, and we come back more TV talk with Dan right here on WEGN. Good morning, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trip Tower overlooking beautiful Michigan Avenue. On Thursday, it is a triple play Thursday, so get your requests in. One artist, three songs. You program the music bumps coming out of the breaks and the commercials and stuff like that. And there you go. Get your text in your requests now for Triple Play Thursday at 312-981-7200. Dan Feinberg is with me. He is the TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N, and he joins us every couple of weeks to talk TV. And welcome back, Dan.
Thank you much.
Okay, so on Monday, the remake of Roots will debut. And when I heard about this, I was kind of shocked that they would remake Roots, such a which obviously, you know, classic, maybe the most, you know, popular miniseries in the history of miniseries, and certainly the first one to really take off. Whose idea was it to remake Roots?
It was basically there were a number of producers who were involved in varying degrees with the original and subsequently, and there were conversations that went like this. People were like, why would you remake Roots? And the answer apparently was as simple as, we showed Roots to some people, and some people had trouble watching it because they felt like it was a little dated, and so we wanted to see if we could give it a little polish up and refresher, and so they did. And, you know, you can't necessarily begrudge them for that entirely. If you go back and watch it, parts of it hold up extraordinarily well, and parts of it do feel dated. And also, more importantly, you can't, with a new audience, you can't have their brains go in fresh in the way that 1977 audiences were approaching that miniseries. Right. And you can't make someone see it and go, oh my God, this is, you know, the first time I've experienced this story. And so the question is there a way of doing honor to it while also doing the same story and making it accessible for younger audiences? So they tried, and honestly, they did well, I would say. I've seen all 8 hours, four nights. It, as you say, premieres Monday and airs then Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday.
And it's History Channel, right?
History Channel, but also A&E and Lifetime. They're all co-branding it. So, you know, it's this thing where it's the best they can do to get as many eyes as possible on it. And then you go back and you look at the ratings for that final night of Roots, where 100+ million viewers tuned in, and you know you can't do that in today's TV, but at least it will be three large cable networks all turning over their programming to it, and it's very impressive. It really does play extremely well, and it plays extremely well even if you have seen the original, even if you were a great appreciator of 12 Years a Slave, even if you saw the BET miniseries last year, Book of Negroes, which is a very, very good miniseries, even if you've been watching WGN America's Underground, which is one of my favorite new shows of the year, great show. It still plays well. Still plays really well.
Who are there names involved that we would know, like directors and actors and so on and so forth?
There are a lot of actually very familiar names on all sides. You know, the four installments. The premiere was directed by Philip Noyce, so you know, of Patriots Games, or if you want to be more socially conscious, of Rabbit Proof Fence and things like that.
Right.
Second episode was New Jack City auteur Mario Van Peebles. The third one was Miami Vice pilot director Thomas Carter, who is, of course, a veteran of both TV and movies. And the fourth one is Driving Miss Daisy director Bruce Beresford. So all respectable directors on the directing side. And on the acting side, sort of the big names people will know. Forest Whitaker plays Fiddler, which was the Lou Gossett Jr. role in the original. And then you watch long enough and Anika Naughty Rose will show up. Anna Paquin shows up. T.I. shows up. Jonathan Rhys Meyers. Chad Pullman from The Wire and Walking Dead. A bunch of semi-big names on that side. Matthew Good, Mekhi Phifer. But a lot of the performances that people are most likely to be talking about are relative newcomers. So Kunta Kinte, you know, the LeVar Burton role is played by Malachi Kirby, and he's a British actor, and he's terrific. And, you know, sadly, you'll probably see him playing third fiddle in a CBS or ABC procedural in a year or two, but you'll see him again. And the question of whether that's good or bad for him when he could probably do a lot more is something else. But there are a lot of really great performances by young African-American and African-British actors who, you know, audiences will not immediately know. But if they stick with it for four nights, they will know.
Okay. And your full review of Roots is actually going to be put up at Hollywood Reporter this morning.
Yes, it will be up on Thursday morning at some absurdly early time. So this is an absurdly early time. So
I was going to say, it's just a few hours from now, Dan.
Exactly.
All right. Well, that's great to hear. I'm interested. You know, I got to say that when I first heard about it, I was skeptical because I was 12 when Roots aired, and I vividly remember watching it the whole week. And you know, talking about it in school the next day, and never really have seen anything like it. But I can understand why some of it would feel dated. I haven't watched it in years. But when you go back and you see, like, they cast, like, sitcom dads from the 70s, like, you know, Robert Reed is in it, and there are other, like, you know, like sitcom dads from the 70s who were cast as slave owners, which is an interesting idea, but would feel dated, I would imagine, you know, looking at Robert Reed, you know.
And it just wouldn't play this, and it just can't play the same way, because part of why they were cast in those roles was as a way of bringing in white audiences who ABC feared wouldn't watch the miniseries.
Right.
And there were a number of characters who were created. Ed Asner won an Emmy for playing a sort of somewhat kindly or conflicted slave ship captain, and that character was not in the Alex Haley novel, and he is not in the new miniseries because people felt that the character was basically the personification of white guilt. And, you know, you don't necessarily need that. And I think this is a really smart and well done approach to something that's really difficult, because you just, you know, you don't want to be meddling with classics, because 8 times out of 10 or 9 times out of 10, you'll blow it.
Yeah.
And I would say this is an example that doesn't blow it, but, you know, the original was nominated for, I think, 37 Emmys. It took advantage of Emmy loopholes that no longer exist. Everybody was nominated. It was nominated for every single hour for, like, sound effect editing. There were Emmy nominations everywhere. And instead, this year, it's going to be in that miniseries category with People versus O.J., with Fargo, with American Horror Story Hotel, with American Crime. I mean, that is a brutal Emmy category that it find itself in. You know, a little bit too bad.
Yeah, okay. You mentioned Ed Asner. Ed Asner, at that time, you know, was on Lou Grant, Mary Tyler Moore, but he had just come off of Rich Man, Poor Man, which was, you know, the original miniseries that I remember just, like, losing my mind over. And so it was, I guess, maybe another reason why he was cast was because, look, well, he was so good in Rich Man, Poor Man, which was incredibly popular. Let's put him in this one. So
Ed Asner, you know, that's a TV resume that Ed Asner has.
Oh, yeah, no question about it. Well, what do you think about some of the new shows that are coming out? You've been watching trailers for these things. They've posted trailers all over the place. What are you intrigued by?
I am intrigued by, I would say, only a little. The last week was Upfronts Week, where the television networks present their schedule to advertisers. And so, you know, they canceled a bunch of shows the week before and to make room for new stuff, and probably watched, I don't know, 30-plus, 40-plus trailers last week and sort of parsed them over at The Hollywood Reporter. And I don't know, some things look good. I'm interested in Kiefer Sutherland as basically the Secretary of Housing and Urban Development who becomes president when a tragedy happens during the State of the Union. And so he's woefully unprepared and the nation's in the middle of a crisis. How will he respond? Well, he's Kiefer Sutherland, so he'll respond perfectly well. But he's Kiefer Sutherland with glasses, so you know he's playing a nerd. He's not playing Jack Bauer. So. But they did not show a trailer for that. They showed basically the first act of the pilot. And the thing that happens that makes Kiefer Sutherland president, it looks pretty shocking. And so I could be on board and curious with that. Also,
and that's called Designated Survivor, right?
It's called Designated Survivor, and it is it's one of ABC's big swings. But most of everything, if you look at the new schedules, it seems like everything is based on something else. It's all about brand. It's all about intellectual property. It's all about established names. So Fox has an Exorcist pilot that stars Gina Davis and at least doesn't look all that much like The Exorcist. And they have a Lethal Weapon pilot that kind of appears to get rid of a lot of the darkness of Lethal Weapon and kind of looks more like Lethal Weapon 3, maybe. But, you know, that could be entertaining, maybe, with Damon Wayans Sr. and one of the actors from Rectify. So that's interesting. You know, you go over to the CW and they have a pilot that's kind of based on Frequency. And you're like, wow, do enough people love Frequency that we're going to base the TV show off of it? And, yeah. You know, and the thing is, I do know people who like Frequency. I just don't know who's going to see a TV show and go, oh, right, I vaguely remember the movie Frequency. This show, which looks very little like it, given that it has a female lead and not Jim Caviezel, I don't know. But then again, the CW also has a pilot about Archie and the gang, and it's called Riverdale, but it really appears to be kind of a small town murder mystery with high school students, one of whom has red hair. It's an odd year. You know, CBS canceled today. They just canceled Limitless, which was a procedural that I really liked, which was based on a movie that was successful.
And by the way, Dan is shaking his head. He seems a little upset, Dan.
I'm just disappointed because it was a show that actually tried something.
Yeah.
Instead, they're replacing it with a new version of MacGyver, and that already sounds like enough of a joke, but this is a version of MacGyver that CBS has redeveloped a couple times already, and they're scrapping everything except for the guy who plays young MacGyver and George Eads from CBS, from CSI, rather, who plays kind of a mentor to young MacGyver, but it's just so strange to me that you would throw out a show that had established itself, was working creatively, and you'd replace it with a show where you were basically saying straight up, we don't know what the show is, but we like that it's called MacGyver.
Yeah. Well, and now, Dan Shugrue, you were into Limitless, and now you're upset.
I was very upset when I was prepping for the show and reading your Twitter feed, Dan, because they actually tried to shop it for 3 days to other platforms, hoping somebody like a Netflix or Hulu or somebody else would pick it up. And so, like, I was preparing myself, but it was still like, damn it, you know, just for the reasons you mentioned, Dan. It was, like, so smart. And every episode had a moment where I just laughed hysterically and be like, that's the cleverest damn thing I've heard all week, you know?
Yeah, it was a charming show, and I would say it was significantly more charming and appealing than the movie that it was based on. And they did try shopping it some, but there wasn't an obvious place for it. And that's the kind of strangeness about today's TV industry, where because it was a CBS TV studios production, basically the best home for it was on CBS. There was no obvious other place where they could shop it, yeah, where it was going to be able to fit. And so it didn't. And it's too bad, because Limitless was a creative and interesting show. And I feel like probably the lesson that CBS is going to learn from it is, let's not go down the creative and interesting path. Let's do things that look semi-interchangeable. And look, if it makes the CBS audience happy, that's what they should be doing.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I, you know, you mentioned in that group of trailers, I did see the trailer for The Exorcist, and I think it looks pretty cool. And I was very happy to see that it was directed by the guy who directed Rise of the Planet of the Apes, which made me even more intrigued by it.
He's also the guy who, if memory serves, also directed the first couple episodes of AMC's Turn. So if that makes it better or worse or less interesting, I don't know. I thought the trailer looked kind of, it just made it look like a trailer for a sequel to The Conjuring or any of the 15 different sort of haunted house knockoff movies that are going to premiere over the course of the summer that all cost probably $5 million to make, and then when they make $25 million, they're ridiculously profitable. I just don't know if that's necessarily the model that TV has been building to, and I also don't know how you sustain a show like that over 13 episodes, or then if it's successful, Fox inevitably says, can you do it in 22? And then you have to go, oh, well, I guess we can do 22 episodes. Then it ends up being a mess like Gotham, which was not a show that should have been 22 episodes. And it's not the way the TV business works. And so I have concerns.
Okay. All right, Dan, hang on.
Sure.
All right, Dan Feinberg is with us. He's a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. Follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. We have some questions from you that were texted in, and more TV talk coming up. Good morning, everybody. Welcome back. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in for the Triple Play at 312-981-7200. That's the text. And we're going to be talking about cliffhangers, the best TV and movie cliffhangers of all time and the worst. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Right now we're talking with Dan Feinberg from The Hollywood Reporter. You can check him out on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N, and we welcome Dan back to the show. Hello, Dan.
Hello, and Evil Mandy coming out and shaking President Palmer's hand.
Oh, okay.
that's just the first thing that came to mind when you said it is Evil Mandy coming out of nowhere, and you thought she was dead, and she shakes President Palmer's hand, and oh my God, is he going to die?
Yeah, okay. That's good. Well, the reason why we're going to do it is because I watch At Midnight every night, Dan, and last night's episode of At Midnight had Robert Kirkman on it, and so it was it was all you know, inside jokes between him and Hardwick. And so at one point, Hardwick walks out on stage with a baseball bat covered in barbed wire. And and the comedians are supposed to write the worst cliffhanger that they can possibly think of. And then what they did at the end of the episode of At Midnight was Hardwick says, we're supposed to crown a winner and eliminate somebody from the show, but we're not going to do it. You're going to have to wait 6 months. And they cut to black. And so that made me laugh. So we're going to be talking. That's why we're talking about it, because At Midnight did a really funny take on it last night. So
makes sense.
Yeah. So, all right. We do have a couple of texts here from the 312 area code. You just mentioned Gotham. It says, will Gotham and Supergirl be back? I love Gotham. No one I know watches it. And Supergirl, meh, is what they say.
Gotham and Supergirl will both be back. I like Gotham a lot. It's a crazy show where once you get past the premise, which a lot of people have been sort of unable to do, has had a lot of fun playing with its darkness and playing with its lunacy and kind of being in the universe of Batman, but not really, because Batman continues to just be a 13-year-old kid, and that continues to be a liability, but I think it's still a fun show. And Supergirl will also be back, but it is moving from CBS over to the CW, which probably is where it began or belonged in the first place, even though CBS kept saying over and over again, oh, we want to be in the superhero business. Oh, we can sustain a superhero show. Oh, this is a perfect CBS superhero show. It turns out not to have been. So Supergirl is moving to the CW, where it will probably have a slightly lower budget, and Calista Flockhart may be around significantly less, which is too bad. But I like Supergirl. I think it is bright and sunny and fun in a way that, you know, shows like Arrow and more frequently The Flash are dark and gloomy. Thanks to Melissa Benoist and the rest of the cast, it was kind of a sunny, smiley superhero show, at least a lot of the time, and I enjoyed that as a contrast, okay, personally.
Well, they are both coming back, though.
They are both coming back.
Okay. 847 area code sends in a text. What is the latest regarding the Sons of Anarchy spinoff?
The latest is that a couple weeks ago they announced that it at least is going to have a script order. So everything moves at sort of strange and slow paces in television. And sometimes networks are willing to dive in and order a series up front and all of that. In this case, though, even though people have been talking about this for a long time, it's only as far as the script, and it will be a Mayans spinoff. The Mayans were the the Mexican-American Latino biker gang that frequently got into tangles with Sam Crow. And the pilot will be written by Kurt Sutter and by another writer, trying to find his name, Elgin James, or Elgin James. And they're going to be at least writing a script, and then they'll order a pilot. And, you know, I assume that probably FX wants to be in this business and to do this spinoff. But I think that with Kurt Sutter, they moved probably too quickly on The Bastard Executioner, which was canceled after one season, which happens very rarely on cable and very rarely on FX. So I think that with this one, rather than diving right in and saying, oh, here, take tons of money and bring us back 13 episodes, they're going step by step. They're doing due diligence. But I assume that somewhere down the road, there will be a Sons of Anarchy spinoff, just not immediately.
Okay. All right. We're going to take a break here, Dan. Hang on, okay?
Sure.
All right. Dan Feinberg is here. We got to take a break for the news. And we'll come back and we'll talk more TV to talk about and answer some more of your texts. Dan is a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. And you can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N, The Fine Print. And, of course, we have that all linked up on our Facebook page, which you should be following us and liking us, Facebook.com/Nick D Show. All right. Let's break for the news. We come back more with Dan Feinberg on WGN. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower, here till 5 a.m. The opening bell with Steve Grzanich at 5 and the great Steve Cochran for your morning drive at 6. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. And again, it's Triple Play Thursday. We'll get that running soon. So get your requests in for Triple Play Thursday. One artist, three songs. You program the bumps. 312-981-7200 for your requests. We're also going to be talking about the best and worst cliffhangers in movies and in television. That'll be coming up a little bit later on. Speaking of TV, Dan Feinberg is here, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. Follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And we welcome Dan back to the show. Welcome back, Dan.
Thank you.
All right. Tell everybody a little bit about Wayward Pines. The season two premiere is going to happen.
It has happened.
It has happened.
Last night, I guess that would be.
Oh,
Wednesday night.
Okay, Wednesday night. All right.
And the first season aired last summer, starred Matt Dillon, and it was initially announced as a limited series, and then it did better than Fox expected to. Sort of a creepy little show about Matt Dillon wakes up in a small town. Something's off in the small town. And spoiler alert, it turns out that they're in the year 4028, and all humans are gone, and Wayward Pines is the last standing town in the world, possibly, and there are weird creatures outside the gate. And no one expected the story to go, but then it got renewed, and Matt Dillon was already gone, so season two premiered on Wednesday, and it's basically almost kind of the same show. I mean, Matt Dillon has been replaced by Jason Patrick, and it's an odd approach. If I was moving forward with the TV show, I would want to move forward. I would not just find the nearest 80s heartthrob in my Tiger Beat catalog and order him up and put him in the same story. But that appears to be what Fox did, and so that means that that we can expect next season to star Corey Feldman or something very similar. And guess what? If you offered Corey Feldman the lead in Wayward Pines season three, he would be there tomorrow. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's okay. I liked the first season. I didn't love the start of the second season. They've added some interesting new people. Jaimin Hansu has been added to the cast. And since, you know, movie directors don't really know how to use Jaimin Hansu, let's see if maybe TV can find a way to use him. I am skeptical about that as well. But, you know, it's a show that maybe probably should have just been done after one season, but who knows? I've only seen two episodes of the new season, so maybe it has more twists up its sleeve.
Okay.
Come here.
And the executive producer behind this thing is M. Night Shyamalan.
He's the guy who they keep listing over and over again. Last season, though, was run by someone who wasn't M. Night Shyamalan, and this season is being run by someone who's not M. Night Shyamalan, but Fox likes putting M. Night Shyamalan's name on things.
Oh.
So I can't tell you how much exactly he has to do with anything. I mean, that people did insist that he was looking at episodes last year and looking at scripts and that he was actually involved, but I don't think he's as involved as Fox wants to make people believe he's involved, or
yeah,
wants people to be convinced he's involved. That's
yeah.
just just the nature of the business.
Okay.
That's not, you know, not like Fox is doing anything underhanded there. It's just when you say M. Night Shyamalan presents Wayward Pines, everyone goes, oh, you must be writing every episode or directing every episode. And the answer is not writing or directing anything.
Yeah. See, for me, when I saw that, it was a strike against it. Like when I saw M. Night Shyamalan's name on it, I went, well, I'm not going to watch that. So I guess it's a double-edged sword, maybe?
I think probably more people are in your camp these days if you look at, well, actually his last movie was kind of a small hit, the sort of the found footage thing that he did last year.
Yeah, go to grandma's house and get in the oven. Whatever,
exactly. Right. I didn't see it, but people said it was a comeback for him. No, but I think that there's definitely an audience that is going to say, no, I watched The Happening. I watched After Earth. I watched Lady in the Water. There's no chance on earth I'm seeing that. But I think that there are still some viewers, enough to be a TV hit, who see his name and go, ooh, okay, that means twistiness.
Yeah, I was never on that boat, man. And not even with Sixth Sense. I was never there.
I liked Unbreakable. Sixth Sense I didn't particularly like, and after Unbreakable I disliked all of them. But I do stand by Unbreakable. I like that.
Well, a lot of people like Unbreakable. It's funny, whenever I have a conversation, because I hated it, but whenever I have a conversation with people about Unbreakable, 90% of the people who really love that movie are also comic book fans. And now, are you a comic book fan?
I'm not. I would not say that that's sort of a defining feature of me. I'm not opposed to comics. Like, I'm not a fanatic, no.
Okay.
But I still appreciate its comic book sensibility, even though it's not a sensibility that obviously I flock to under other circumstances. So yet I watch like 15 different TV shows that are based on comic books.
I know. Well, everything seems to be based on a comic book nowadays, man.
Exactly.
Kathy sends in a text that says, does Dan know of a series on Amazon called Fortitude? And if so, how does he feel about it? I think it's a murder mystery set in the Arctic Circle.
It is indeed. It's actually, it's on Amazon because things find their way to different streaming services. It aired on Pivot. And as to whether anyone knows what Pivot is,
I don't.
It aired on Pivot. Yeah. And it was a Pivot co-production, and it is indeed a creepy, strange murder mystery set in the Arctic Circle and in a small insular community that's never had a murder, and suddenly, obviously, a murder turns things upside down. And it's one of many, many TV shows, or a number of TV shows, that I still need to finish, but I still really liked when it premiered, and I will definitely finish it because the second season is currently in production and will air later this year again on Pivot, and people joining the cast include Dennis Quaid, who apparently is really enjoying working in TV these days. Yes, it's a good and creepy and strange and unique take on a murder mystery. Simon Donald created it, a British writer, and it's just an interesting take on a fairly familiar story.
Okay.
And the first season cast included Michael Gambon, among other people, Christopher Eccleston, and yeah, it's worth checking out. It's familiar but different enough to make it worth your time.
Okay, all right. I have the first episode of Preacher on my DVR, and I've not watched it yet. I'm probably going to watch it this morning when I get home. Where do you stand on that? And we're speaking of comic book shows, and tell everybody about Preacher.
I look forward to hearing your response to it. First of all, I think a lot of people seem to really enjoy it when it premiered last week. I liked the premiere. I think the premiere is sort of crazy and sloppy and messy and all over the map. And I think it is all of those things, both because the original Garth Ennis and Stephen Dillon comic was like that, but also because it's a great way of letting people know very, very early on if they're going to be in or out. And I think most people will know after one episode if they're curious. And it's a really hard show to describe. There's a preacher played by Dominic Cooper in a small town in Texas. He's losing his congregation, he's losing his faith, but then a strange entity inhabits him and things happen and chaos ensues, and there's an alcoholic Irish guy with some powers, and the preacher's ex-girl is a is a bad girl named Tulip, and it's really hard, and there's a guy whose face looks like a rectum, and his
right.
face is called Arseface. So it's hard to describe, but you watch a few minutes of it, and either you sign on and you go, I am there, or you sign off and say, good Lord, why would anyone watch this? For me, I didn't love Dominic Cooper, but Joseph Gilgun, who some people will know from Misfits, and Ruth Negga, who some people will know from probably maybe an episode or two of Misfits, but also from Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., they're both spectacular. Okay. And I think that they are reasons to watch the show. And the second and third and fourth episodes, which I've also seen, continue things going in interesting ways. And I think after four episodes, I was fully on board.
Okay, cool. I'm looking forward to watching it. A couple of quick movie things that you tweeted. You said you tweeted The Lobster clearly is not everybody's vibe or most people's, but it surely was mine. I'm with you 100%, Dan. I loved it.
It is a wacky movie.
Yes, it is.
And I dug it. And I also like it because Fox has a current horrible reality show called Coupled, which is basically a live, no irony, tropical version of The Lobster. it's so ridiculous. Once you've sort of seen the fake illusion of compatibility play out the way it plays out in The Lobster, watching a reality dating show is just impossible. You watch people on, like, The Bachelor go, we've got so much in common because we both have a lazy eye, and you suddenly go, oh my God, this is horrible. You're all going to become tiny ponies. It's all going to be horrible. But it's also awesome because you watch it in that way and you go, oh my goodness, this is all just totally exactly what's happening in the movie.
You know,
they go out on dates and then they get to move to the couple suite and then they really do go out on yachts. They have a yacht date. It's like almost, they're so close to having a child added if they have relationship difficulties.
Now I'm intrigued to watch it just through the eyes of someone who has seen and loved The Lobster.
I think you can probably honestly do that with any reality dating show because The Lobster is so cynical about, I don't know, just the illusions of romantic compatibility.
Oh, yeah.
The necessity of it and how that's kind of the thing that fuels all of these shows, the Bachelor knockoffs. And once you've got the mindset of The Lobster, any Bachelor knockoff that you watch, it has a whole new, very, very strange and somewhat disturbing flavor that might make it more fun or might kill it forever.
Wow, that's amazing. I also want to mention very quickly, Colin Farrell, best performance he's ever given, as far as I'm concerned.
Really? Is it really the best he's given?
Well, I mean, I'm a big fan of his, so it's just, you know, because I think he's pretty much great in everything. I mean, he's done a lot of crappy movies.
I think he's great when people let him be funny, and so something like in Bruges or something.
Oh, yeah.
I think that would be a performance I would put higher personally he's great. There's no question he's great, and I think The Lobster is just a nifty movie that a lot of people, if you told them to go see it, would probably hate.
Oh yeah, no, I've already Dan, I gave it a positive review Monday morning, and I've gotten some interesting feedback. So that's all I'm going to say. I also want to mention before we let you go, you tweeted about The Nice Guys. I just want to mention I laughed my ass off during that movie. And I just want to mention the fact that Ryan Gosling, there's a scene in The Nice Guys where Ryan Gosling, after drunkenly falling down a hill, discovers a dead body and begins to channel Lou Costello, where I don't know if I've laughed harder at a scene in a movie. And the fact that, like, Gosling is doing Lou Costello in a movie in 2016... I don't know, for some reason it just destroyed me.
There are things that he's doing in this movie that are very strangely inspired and that I give him full credit for. And as I tweeted, I think it's a movie that's going to play better when I see it a second time, when you can sort of pick out the parts of the movie that you want to laugh at any given time, because there's a lot happening at all times in that movie.
Yeah, I found it to be very enjoyable, and I can't wait to see it again. So, all right, listen, always a pleasure to have you on, Dan. People can follow you on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N, The Fine Print, and read your reviews in The Hollywood Reporter. And in just a few hours, if people are interested in your review of the new version of Roots, that'll be up in just a few hours right here on the Hollywood Reporter website.
It will indeed.
Okay, Dan, always a pleasure. We'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
Talk to you soon.
Okay, take care. Dan Feinberg, everybody. Great guest. Very cool. Knows everything about TV. And you can read him in The Hollywood Reporter. All right, we'll take a quick break. It's Nick DiGilio on 720 WGN.